Blog Talk Radio.
Thursday, August 5th, 2010, and this is the Hermetic Hour. Tonight we'll feature a talk on magical pathworkings. These are hypnotic guided tours of the astral plane, interplane projections intended to introduce magical students to deeply significant symbolism from mythology and traditional occult correspondences. The Kabbalistic Tree of Life is the roadmap. Now, the central idea here is that the student confronts the symbols or the archetypes and receives personal knowledge that he or she might not obtain by conscious study. These are astral initiations. Now, we'll look at the history of this type of working, the Eastern version that influenced our OTA pathworking system, and we'll even take you on a mini pathworking so that you can experience some of the effect. Now, this is an important part of traditional magical lodge instruction, and it's not very well understood. So we're going to try to make this particular technique clearer to you. Now, I'd like to repeat the guest call-in number for you and invite you to call in at any time. And we have enough room in tonight's show where we can take your calls and chat with you about anything we've had on the show. So the guest call-in number is area code 347-857-1830. I'll repeat that. Area code 347-857-1830. So I invite you to call in at any time during the show, and we'll take time for your questions and see if we can answer them. And while we're waiting for somebody to call in here, let's get on into this pathworking discussion. Pathworkings are hypnotic workings, very definitely hypnotic workings. One of the problems that we've had with this in the West, in the traditional Western Masonic lodges, Masonic-type occult lodges like the Golden Dawn and the OTO and various other lodges here in the West, is that during the Victorian era, as I explained in an earlier broadcast, during the Victorian era, there was a prejudice and a fear developed about hypnosis. The mesmerists were holding sway at that time, and they were knocking people off their feet on stage, and they were doing these very spectacular things with mesmerism. Some of the things they were doing were rather frightening, and so people developed a fear that hypnosis of any sort was stealing your mind. And the Golden Dawn had in its oaths, it made its members swear not to be hypnotized. The OTO had the same thing. And so I assume several other lodges, which I'm not You know, I'm not familiar with the rituals of all of them, but this during the Victorian era, this was pretty much a universal thing in the West. Now, in the East, they had a different attitude toward hypnosis. In India and Tibet and in the areas like this, they were they didn't have that particular name for the phenomenon, but they had used it in their rituals, they used it in their practice, and so they were not hobbled with this restriction. So this was why when we got started in the West with path workings, there was this is a pretty controversial thing. Now, as far back as we can trace the history of path workings in the West, we go back to the Golden Dawn's Sphere Group. Now, the Sphere Group was started by Florence Farr, who was George Bernard Shaw's significant other. She was a very prominent actress at the time. However, she was also, along with being an actress and being on George Bernard Shaw's arm, she was also a very much of an adept. And at one time, she actually was the imperator of the Golden Dawn. She and William Butler Yeats had that office back and forth. Now, Florence Farr developed the Sphere Group as a side group in the Golden Dawn. Now, what the Sphere Group did was they did these path workings. They called it the Sphere Group because they were doing sphere magic. In other words, they were doing these interplane projections to the spheres. Now, let's explain exactly what an interplane projection really is. What it is a guided tour in a state of reverie, of hypnotic reverie. The leader of the tour, who is the instructor or the path working leader, he induces a state, quite frankly, a state of hypnosis. He can do this ritually, he can be more or less clinical about it. He can have everybody relax and get them into this state. And then, however, it does need some ritual, obviously, if it's going to be magic. And we're going to have to open the magical gateways, use the magical symbolism. But what he'll do then is when he gets the group into this reverie, then using a measured tone of voice, and it does help to be a fairly good hypnotist, using a measured tone of voice, he will narrate a journey for them. He'll describe a journey that they're all taking through a landscape that will contain symbols and it'll contain archetypes. It'll contain perhaps tableaus and mini dramas. He carries them along on this journey, and they should, if it's the path working is well done and if it's well constructed, they should be able to individually, in their reverie, they should be able to confront the archetype, the symbol, the tableau, whatever it is that they're brought to, and whatever it is they confront, they should be able to receive some special personal intelligence from that entity or that symbol or that inscription or whatever it is that they're brought to. And this should be their personal information for them alone. And I want to stress this now, this is the real purpose of path workings. This is what they're intended to do. And this is why they should be traditional. They should fit definitely, have the symbolism of the path and the tree of life that they're working. You should have that symbolism very carefully laid out so that as you walk along the path taking the journey toward the sphere that you're going to, There shouldn't be any particular surprises in the as far as the operator is concerned. In other words, the operator knows what's there. It's all planned traditionally. And the surprises should come to the participant, to the student, who finds out these things that he otherwise never would have known, perhaps about himself, about his relation to the particular element or the particular magical correspondence that he's confronting. This is something that he can't get just by studying books or just by memorizing or even by doing his own rituals. This gets him deep into his mind, and he can bring these things out. Now, this is a bit of a mystical proposition here, because you recall Socrates, in a hermetic moment, Socrates once said, well, we don't really learn anything, we just remember things. So in a sense, this presupposes that there's a lot of knowledge inside your own mind that there's a tremendous depth of knowledge in your own mind that you're going to access in the course of your occult learning. And that's kind of a hermetic proposition. That's not the sort of thing that the B.F. Skinner people would go for. And it's not the sort of thing that an atheist, reductionalist, behaviorist scientist would go for. But it is the sort of thing that a Kabbalist, a Jungian, a magician, and certainly a person who believes and follows Hermetic philosophy would certainly believe in. Now, let's make something clear here. According to our philosophy, this, where you're going along the tree here, is an entrance into a universal dimension. In other words, we believe that the human mind is, at a certain level, connected to every other human mind, and that, granted, there are infinite possibilities and infinite levels and degrees, but we don't consider that these interplaying projections are just your imagination. We think they go further than that. They think they go that you must go deep, deep, deep down into your own mind in order to go out into the universe and out to the farthest star. Now we can. I know that sounds a bit fantastic, but that is what we believe. Remember my colleague Lon Duquette. We just heard him the other day, and he has a wonderful song called Being God for Just 1 Hour. Talk about a magician. Anyway, Lon's quote that I love to reissue his quote, he said, it's all in your head, but you have no idea how big your head is. And that, my version of that is, we take long space flights between the right ear and the left ear. So we believe that we can access the far greater universe by doing these interplane projections. However, we do, and in our program, we stick to traditional symbolism. And we don't go off wandering off the path into other things and whatever. We follow the traditional path, symbolism as it's laid out. Now that brings a point that leads me to a point. I'm not going to claim that we the OTA invented attention points in the West, because actually, I think the sphere, although I don't know if any of the sphere path workings have survived, but I do know that back in the early 1960s, Basil Wilby he writes under the name of Gareth Knight. Basil Wilby was doing them, and I have a copy, 1965 copy of New Dimensions Red Book here, right by my elbow. And in New Dimensions Red Book, he takes a path work, or conducts a path working, a 30-second path from Malkuth to Yasod. And in there, he has a very definite attention point. In fact, I think I will I'll read this to you. This his little attention point that here that he has on the Moon Goddess that he does here in New Dimensions Red Book. This was 1965, so this will show you what we're talking about here. If I can find it here in the book, let's see. Let's see. I'll start. He's already gone underwater, and they're leading people up onto this island. And he says the island is a gray kind of volcanic rock, and the planet dominating it is a nine-sided building shaped something like a threepenny piece, only with nine sides. And as we watch it, the whole island and the building upon it begins to glow and become translucent, so that we can see inside a glowing blue, purple, grayish, bright lozenge. And there, seated on a throne, is a great female figure, a queen or goddess of the moon. And she has a heavy, ponderous build and a white pallor of skin one would associate with the moon. And she may well be one of the classical goddesses dedicated to the moon. And about her are many moon maidens, and there do not seem to be any men in attendance upon her. And now she is holding up her hand in recognition and salutation to us, and we will have a few moments silence while each one of us sees if she has any message or token for us individually. And this may not be in any particular words. It may be a symbol, or it might just be a feeling of recognition. We will now hold this figure in our minds in silence for a few moments. All right, and after a few moments, he gets back into his narration, and he carries them on. Now, this was 1965. This was published, probably done around 1960 or 62. And that's definitely is an attention point. That's the kind of thing we do. Now, so I certainly can't claim that we developed attention points, but how I got introduced to this whole attention point thing was rather interesting. Some of you may have heard about a group called Ekankar, who was founded by a man named Paul Twitchell, and the first book he came out with was called The Tiger's Fang back in that, about 1970, I think. And Paul Twitchell was a student of the Sikh Sant master Kirpal Singh. And Kirpal Singh taught him the Sikh Sant pathworking system. And Paul Twitchell then proceeded to westernize it in his Ekankar program. Now, Paul Twitchell, in his books, does not mention Kirpal Singh. He says the secret master that he has. The reason why he doesn't, according to what I understand, is that Paul Twitchell had his students, after they had gone through their pathwork, then they were off doing it by themselves and going and exploring on the inner planes and whatever. And according to what I've heard, and I can't confirm this, but this is what the scuttlebutt is, that Kirpal Singh told him, please don't mention my name as your master, because that's not the way I want to do these path workings. This is not that these are done for instructional purposes, and you follow the guru, and the guru tells you what you're going to confront, and what you get out of it is yours, but the guru directs you, and if you have these people going off into the inner planes all by themselves, you're not doing it the way I want it done. So don't say I'm your master. Well, now, that's probably pretty reasonable, because the Ekankar people became adventurers on the inner planes, and which is, you know, and I don't have anything really, I don't have anything against that. I think that adventuring on the inner planes is interesting and perhaps productive. It can also be escapist. It can also be self-delusional. But you know, I'm not, but I can understand where Kirpal Singh is coming from. And anyway, that's the background on that. But I wasn't a member of Ekankar. I read Twitchell's book. But we had a member, he's passed on now, Frater Apollinaeus, who had also studied under Kirpal Singh. And he said one night in 1971 in Pasadena, in our temple, big temple on Lake Street, Lake Avenue, he said, I'm going to take you folks on an astral journey to the Temple of Venus. So we said, okay. So we all went into our black painted actually at that time, meditation room, and we all put our heads together and lay down on cushions. And Brother Apollinaeus sat there, and he was a good hypnotist, and he sat there, and he got us relaxed, and he took us on this Kirpal Singh type path work into the Temple of Venus. And the imagery, I was astounded at the vividness of the imagery that was evoked by this. It was like I was walking through a crystalline landscape, and everything was more colorful and more intense than life itself. It was better than most dreams. I mean, it was really. And so when we came out of this, I told Apollinaeus, I said, we have got to cabalize this system. We have to get this into our, you know, into the Kabbalah. Well, so I was really inspired. So what I did was I got here again, Basil Wilby and Gareth Knight's two-volume set of Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism. Now, I think that's still available. It's two volumes. Now, something I want to explain right quick, or go back over and explain. The Hermetic Kabbalah, not the Rabbinical Kabbalah or the Hasidic Kabbalah or any of those other Kabbalahs, but the Hermetic Kabbalah is very, very much influenced by the paths and the tarot. So we have a lot of tarot symbolism that relates to each path, and we have developed quite a bit of path symbolism from other mythologies and whatever that the Rabbinical Kabbalah or the Hasidic Kabbalah don't have. So this is basically what path workings are mostly concerned about, is this Hermetic aspect of the Kabbalah, the Hermetic Kabbalah. And so the tarot card for each path, and the tarot card figures in the symbolism, and then the planet or the astrological sign or the element that refers to the path, that also influences the symbolism. So you take a book like Basil came up with, the Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, which is based on this. It really, it's a do-it-yourself path-working kit for those of you who want to start off and write your own. So I got this, and my experience, of course, from going on this Apollonius' version of Kirpal Singh's Venus working, and I started cabalizing. And, of course, I cabalized along OTA lines. And but we, you know, we're pretty close to the traditional Golden Dawn, traditional Hermetic symbolism in this. And yet we really emphasize the attention points. So instead of having just one attention point, our pathway, whereas Basil did just the moon goddess when he did his, we had. Going up to Yasod, we had the jewels in the cave. We had the tree alphabet, and then we went on through, and then we went to the dolmen out the Saturn dolmen, and then we went up to the on the top of the Colossus and went into the sphere of memory. We had four major attention points that we did. So we really, and then we come out. What you do when you get the path work you've done. You come out immediately, and you log it. And of course, you know the leader creates the header and the log page, and you mark out all the attention points, so that everybody knows what the attention points are. And then you hand it to the first student. It's okay, you know, go through and tell us what you got in each one of those attention points, unless it's very personal. You want to keep it yourself, but other than that, you know, tell us what you got. And so we log it. You got to log it very quickly. We also ask the students to keep their own logbook too, because they need their own record. And if you don't do this, if you don't get it logged and get it logged in detail, you're going to lose it, because these things are like dreams. They're very vivid when they're going on. Believe me, they're vivid. But if you don't get it logged, you're going to lose it. And it's like a dream record. And you've got to do it quick. You can't dwaddle. I mean, you know, once I get the header done, I go into the kitchen and start cooking a pizza or something like that. But I've got to get that header done, and I got to get them started immediately, logging the thing. And some of what they get is very, very, very important to them. It's very important to the magical learning process. So that's basically the way we did it. From the influence of Kirpal, and also, you know, taking Basil's Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, going through and creating our own system. Now, the way we do it, and I will describe to you the setup here. But at the same time, I'm describing the setup. Wait a minute. Remember, the call-in number is 347-857-1830. I'll repeat, 347-857-1830. Give us a call. Now, when Sister Clito ever gets our website fixed back up so you can see the pathworking section in the website right now. Yeah, and it all, well, Frater Chiron has the backup. He has the backup, but he's over in Prescott, and Clito is up in Los Angeles, and we're going to get this archive. We have a nice pathworking archive showing pathworking setups and everything on the website. I'm gonna talk with the sister tomorrow and see. I go with both of them and see if I can't get that back up on there so you can look at it. However, we have in our video the rites of magic. That's the rites of magic. We have a section in there on pathworkings, and in there we do a shortened, edited version of the pathworking from Malkuth to Yasod, our version of it, and we show it in the video. We show the induction, and then we get into the middle of the pathworking, and we show, and I have artwork that I did for the video that shows you what gives you an idea what the imagery should look like. And I will go over that in a little bit, you know, the part that we did show you. So you can get the Rites of Magic. I think I just sent four of them off to Amazon just the other day, so they're there. You can get that, and you can see just exactly how we do it. But I will describe it in lieu of being able to show you right now. We use a big, big magic mirror, optical magic mirror, and it is convex. Now it's convex, and it is suspended from the ceiling of the temple, and it's suspended over the heads of the people taking the pathwork. Now they lie in the magic circle with their feet out toward the edge of the circle, and they lie on pillows. Of course, they all wear black robes, and they lie on black pillows. And they look up at this black mirror, and on top of the mirror, which is suspended over them, we put the symbolism of the path and the sphere that we're working, the tarot card, and we burn the right kind of incense, and we have the right color cloth on the top of the mirror, the back of the mirror. And then they, you know, after we have a little ceremonial opening, oh, I got a call? Oh, good. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Frater Chiron calling
well,
in.
Well, hi, Chiron. We got to get that website. I just said we got the here I am describing the pathworking setup, and we need to get that archive back on the website. I'll talk to Clyde tomorrow, and we'll get that going. What's up with you?
Well, just a couple of things. I wanted to comment on your dark mirror experience that I had in your temple a while back. There was one occasion where, as dense as I am in visualizing and whatnot, I actually ended up on the other side of the mirror for a few seconds. Now, that was pretty impressive. I don't know how to describe it any better than that. It's just that I was floating in space, and I saw the four quarter candles, and it was warm and friendly, but it was definitely different. So it can work. So I recommend it.
Oh yeah, I won't get into personal stuff, but I got another caller too. But we've had people that float up to the ceiling. I mean, on this thing. So, and then they still go along on the path working. So actually, if you're prone to that sort of thing, you can do an OBE, which is kind of what you got pretty close to doing.
That's true.
Yeah.
You also remember on one occasion my wife ended up in your crystal ball. So,
well, that's good. You're supposed to. You use the crosshairs method. Get inside the crystal ball. That should be part of the experience. Have we got another call hanging on? Yeah, I got another one. I'm gonna take this other call. Thanks for calling. I'll get back to you tomorrow. Though I want to get this website thing straightened up.
Okay, it's a deal.
Okay, good enough. Take care.
Okay,
what next guy? Are you on air? Who am I talking to?
You still have Chiron here.
Oh, I still have. Okay, you want to sign off, and we'll get the next guy.
Okay, we'll do. Bye for now.
Okay, thanks. Bye. Okay, who we got on the line here? Do we have anybody on the line here? Are you still hanging on? Well, I guess he's off. Oh, he didn't give us much of a chance there. Well, you know, you gotta hang in there, boy. Tell him to call. Well, my engineer just told me to tell you to call back, and obviously that's what I'm telling you to do. Okay, let's get going on describing just how we do this mechanically. Now, Chiron just told you, yeah, you can do you can go through the mirror, you can do an OOB, you can do it, yeah, you can make this as much of an astral, you know, of an OOB as you want to. All right, now we have the caller. Okay, what are you? You're on the air. Who am I talking with?
Is this the Hermetic Hour?
Yes, it is the Hermetic Hour. Who am I speaking with?
I'm just listening to this show. I don't want to be on the air. I just want to listen.
Well, you just want to listen. Well, okay, sure, fine. Well, don't you have a question that you might want to throw at us?
I just tuned in, so I haven't heard much of the show yet.
Okay, well, then you call back as soon as you get an idea what we're up to.
Can I listen to the show? Because I don't have a computer.
Sure, you can listen to it. You can listen to it over your computer anyway. I don't have a computer.
I'm listening on the phone. Can I stay on the line and listen?
Well, the problem is, if you stay on the line and listen, nobody else can call in. That's the trouble. See, that's the problem. So we really would.
I understand what you're talking about. But then on the other hand, we have the line open so somebody else can call in if you would. So anyway, this encourages you to get a computer. But if you can't, the other thing that you might want to do is get one of our videos from Amazon, and well, I don't know how you're going to do that without a computer. Okay, bye-bye. Is he off? Okay. Anyway, let's get back to describing how we do this thing. Because obviously the experience is really great, and it's just part of magic that people need to know how to do it. And so the way we set it up, and the way I think the Golden Dawn used to do it, I know that they in recent years this has been the doorways to the paths on the Tree of Life. Okay, we got another caller. Who am I talking with?
Hello.
Hey, you're on the Hermetic Hour. Who am I speaking with?
Oh, this is John.
Yeah, John. What's up with you, and what would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm just a little interested. I actually purchased your book. The Book of Solomon's Magic, and I've been listening to your show for a couple of weeks, and I'm just curious about in all your years of the different practicings of magic and ceremonial magic, have you ever been able to quantify any results actually from the magic that you've actually performed over your 30 plus years, 40 years or so? I mean,
oh boy, we sure have. And the biggest thing that I ever did with magic.
Let me just put it this way.
The biggest thing I ever did with magic involved sex magic. And this works, if you do it right, it works like gangbusters. And what I managed to do with sex magic was to get the dream job. And right now, the dream job. I mean, the career job that I just wished for, and it fitted all of the characteristics that I wanted, exactly what we asked for, exactly when we asked for it, and it lasted for 9 years, and it would have, the company folded up after 9 years, but so it would have lasted for 10. And my engineer, who is my lovely engineer who's sitting here, my producer, she's also my producer, and a national Scrabble champion on top of everything else, she worked at the same company. this was amazing, but I also, before that, I had done other things too. But magic works. It really does work. And one of the problems with it is, it works, but if you do it for the wrong reasons and you don't, what I'm trying to say is there's no free lunch. But believe me, it does work. Now, does that answer your question?
I'm just trying to figure out exactly how you link back something, or what is considered the right reason or the wrong reason, or if the right reason is for if it's for altruistic reasons, or if the right reason is also has some self interest in there, as long as you're a little bit altruistic, or you know, I mean, like an example, I mean, if if it was really, if it's quantifiable and effective based on, you know, ritual.
Well,
I mean, can someone say I want to win the lottery or something like that and put
well,
put into
magic? Yeah, I said, you remember I said that we're trying to win the lottery with it. You're really turning the crank awful hard when you do that. That's a real hard thing to do. But as far as self-interest is concerned, I've been job shopping. I've been making good money when I was job shopping, but unfortunately, I was married and had a baby, just had a child, and my gosh, you know, we needed a captive physician. I mean, we really did, and so we did this, and whammo, we got the ideal, just 15 minutes drive from my place, and it was just perfect, and it was, you know, a really, really good company, and everything worked out just beautifully. And I'll tell you that I don't think that's so much self-interest, because I was thinking about my family too, you know.
Right.
You know, as long as it's a good thing, if it's a good thing, self-interest is fine. It just as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else, or you know, it doesn't, you aren't wallowing around in some kind of black magic. And frankly, tell you the truth, if you're sociopathic, you can probably get black magic to work for you too. It doesn't work for normal people, because normal people got too much guilt going with it.
Right.
So that's one of the dangerous things, as I said, is sociopathic individuals are attracted to black magic. And unfortunately, they can do it effectively too. But most of us, for normal people, magic should be done for the right reasons and good reasons, and it'll work for you. But that's not the reason why you do it. That's not
right.
The reason why you get into it. You get into it for enlightenment. You get into it to become something more than human. You get into it to find God. You get into it to become, well, you know, to become immortal. That's the real reason why you should do magic. And if you do it just for gimme, 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 well, sooner or later it's gonna tell you what it's really for.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I'm not quite done with your book yet. I just got it a couple of days ago, so I'm still reading your book. But so far,
I'm glad you are. I've been meaning to come out with a second edition. I've got a second edition almost finished, and it's been, because that book's been out a long time. We've made a lot of improvements and additions and the stuff that I'd like to put in the second edition. But the book holds up, and so I'm glad you're getting something out of it. So give us a call.
You should get your movie, the Beyond Lemuria. You should get that up on Netflix so people could rent it, because I was looking for it.
It is on Netflix, but the problem is that Netflix runs out of them. But it is. Netflix is carrying it. If you go to Netflix, Netflix. If you go to Netflix and then you plug in Beyond Lemuria, they'll show it to you.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? I actually did kind of see it, but it didn't show like there was anything that they could send me. So it probably just means that it's out. It's rented out.
Warren Curley at Reality Entertainment needs to send them some more, and I'll tell him to get some more of them over there if that'll work. Anyway, okay. When you get done with the book, give us another call, will you? And see.
Okay, we'll do.
Tell me what you like. Okay. Nice talking with you. Bye bye. Okay. Now back to. I was going to get this pathworking thing at least cover the technical aspects of it. So those of you who might want to do it, you'll have an idea of the elaborate way to do it and then the not-so-elaborate way to do it. Now, the elaborate way to do it, which we have in Rites of Magic in the video, the elaborate way to do it is, like I say, way down in the middle of the circle in that ground star formation with your heads together. Don't touch your sides and don't keep your feet together. And I have another caller. Okay, you're on the air with the Hermetic Hour. Who am I talking with?
This is Dr. X.
Oh, Dr. X again.
Hey, what do you mean again?
What do you mean again? This is the doctor, the evil side of Dr. Xavier. Yeah.
What I'm calling in about is I want to encourage you in your path workings, and particularly I would like you to publish the Adamson's Quest that you have, as well as some induction descriptions that you can do with the guided meditation. I really think that's important because I really think it's a really, really excellent method that is not well known outside of your group.
Well, I'm just about to get into that, and so with your encouragement, I will proceed. I think I've got time enough to describe an induction, and at least get it described, and I'll go ahead and do that. And thanks for reminding me. And I'll be on the phone with you tomorrow, okay?
All righty, I'll get out of your way. Bye for now.
Okay, right, bye. All right, now look, what, as I said, the elaborate method is to take this mirror and hang it suspended over, or if you want to do a soul door method, that's where you can all sit on stools and stare at a big floor-to-ceiling dark mirror like we have in Pasadena, you know, with an Egyptian arch around it and all that. And, oh, boy. And that's the soul door method. Okay, I got another caller. Who's you're on the Hermetic Hour? Who am I talking with? You're on the Hermetic Hour. Who am I talking with? Did I lose him? Okay, I lost him. So the soul door is great if you can afford to build one and all of that, that's fine. Or you could have a big dark mirror just hanging there, and you can sit around it and look at it. But here's the thing you want to do. You want to put a tatwa. Some of you guys, I know you know what tatwas are. Tatwas are an Eastern import that the Golden Dawn used. They're elemental. There's a tatwa for each of the four elements, okay? Well, there's a whole bunch of different tatwas, but there's a tatwa for each of the four elements. Now, the tatwas use flashing colors. In other words, the tatwa for fire has a red triangle in the center of a green field. Now, you know what that does when you look at it, because the reflex color action of the green is red, and the reflex color action of the red is green. So if you stare at this, it's going to start flashing for you, and that can give you a magical effect which you can use. So you take the tatwa of the element which applies to the path, and you stick that on the mirror with double sticky tape. Now, of course, magicians have to have double sticky tape. There's a caller, and you're on the Hermetic Hour. Who am I speaking with?
Alicia.
Hi, Alicia. What could we do for you?
I just want to know what exactly you're talking about. Like, what? How do I have a dark mirror?
How do you have a dark mirror? Well,
yeah.
Best thing to do is to get yourself a piece of glass, and be sure when you get this piece of glass cut for you, round. Make sure that the edges are beveled, because otherwise you start playing around with just a straight cut glass. Oh boy, you're asking for a bad razor cut. So have your glass cutter bevel the edges for you. Get yourself a round piece of glass, the size that you want, and then you take to the one side of the glass. And if you want to, you can sprinkle a Bardonian fluid condenser, you know, over it if you'd like to do that. You know, we had a show on the Bardonian fluid condenser. You can do that if you want to, or you don't have to. And then spray yourself with various metallic spray paints and make yourself a kind of a misty vortex with metallic paint, and then spray black paint over the top of that once that's dry. And then what you end up with is a black glass that looks like you're looking into a galaxy or a nebula or something like that. And it's this real nice black glass. Of course, if it has fluid condenser in it, then you're, you know, that's even better. And then mount it in a nice frame and prop it up, and you're good to go. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Or, now the other thing you can do is you can get a hold of azure green, or
I can Google them, Azure Green, and they supply houses, and they have nice scrying mirrors like this that are already made. You can get them for, $40 or $50 or something like that, or a big one for $75, so you can do that too. Okay, thanks for calling, and we'll call me back when you get your mirror, and we'll talk you through it, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, right.
Hi.
So, yeah, bye-bye. All right, now back to the Tatwa in the mirror, okay? We got the Tatwa in the mirror. Now, the informal way of doing this, and let me point this out. You don't need to have all this equipment. In fact, Basil Welby, when he did that little pathwork that I read you before, they just sat down in a dark room and lit a candle, burned a little incense, and off they went. You don't need all of this, but it helps. It helps to have that focal point. It helps to go out through the mirror. Now, so I would say the mirror and the Tatwa would be very, very good way to do this. And the right incense, and of course, naturally do a pentagram ritual before you start. And if you want to elaborate a little bit more, you could open up the sphere that you're going to. That requires a septagram ritual or a hexagram ritual if you're into the Golden Dawn and the things. But here again, keep it simple. And the pentagram ritual is very nice for protection to get yourself going. Now, in hypnotic induction, and this is what I suggest you do, to get everybody that's going to go on this expedition with you, get them all in whatever position you're going to put them in, and then tell them to relax and have them breathe deeply, and then have them tense their muscles and relax their muscles, tense the leg and then relax it, the other leg, and then relax it, and then you relax the arm, make a fist, raise the arm up a few inches off the floor, and make a fist real tight, and relax it. Get everybody good and relaxed, and then tell them, and as they're looking at the mirror, keep them looking at the mirror while they're doing this, and then you bring their consciousness up through their feet, and they get their feet kind of numb when you get their feet. And a consciousness comes up through the ankles. Many of the ankles are numb. The consciousness up through the knees, leaving the legs like soft melted wax. And then that consciousness comes up through the thighs and leaves the thighs like soft melted wax. And up into the small of the back. And all the tension is going out of the small of the back. It all drained out. Now, one thing that's important when you're doing a hypnotic induction is don't ever say it's going to, it always is, it's always, you don't say you're going to get me relaxed, you say you are relaxed, your whole body is relaxed, your arms and shoulders are relaxed, your head is relaxed, and this goes on and on. Do it properly, and then the eyelids become heavy, and then you tell them that their spiritual body is coming alive, and as their physical body becomes inert and becomes totally relaxed, the spiritual body is coming alive, the little spiritual body, and the consciousness is extending to it, and the spiritual body is anxious to be free, and the spiritual body, as the physical eyelids close, the spiritual body will move forward, and the spiritual body in the mirror gets larger, and the spiritual body is rolling out and flying out through the thought, but as their eyes close, the spiritual body wings its way through the dark mirror, and you find yourself in the realm of the elements, and you're in the cavern, and you're walking down the cavern, and the phosphorescent glow of the walls, and how the important, okay, everybody, wake up. Now, the important thing about this is to get that spiritual body, get that little spiritual body out there as the eyes close, the physical eyes close, you get that spiritual body out there and make that bridge between the imagination and the staring at the mirror and the Tatwa, and the imagination should blend as the spiritual body goes out, the eyes close. This requires some skill. You should know how to do it, and you should practice it. And I strongly suggest that everybody that's going to do this program, and I said so in the Book of Solomon's Magic, get yourself a copy of Leslie M. LeCron's Self-Hypnotism, Its Technique and Use in Daily Living, and go through the whole book. It's real simple. It's real short. And train yourself as a self-hypnotist. And then the result of that will be you will be a very good hypnotist. If you first, and this is something a secret that a lot of people don't know, that in the Orient, magicians in the Orient hypnotize themselves before they hypnotize their subjects. Now remember that. So this is all skills that you need, but you will acquire these skills by reading the right material and doing the exercises and working properly through the program. All of this is outlined in the Book of Solomon's Magic, and I would strongly suggest, by the way, that you get the Rites of Magic, and you'll see this pathworking that we have in the Rites of Magic. You'll see the part of the pathwork, not the whole thing, but we have our version of that working that Basil Wilby did. And I just thought that I would read, in a few minutes we have left here, I just read you just a little bit of this script. It's the same one that's in the Rites of Magic movie here. I'll give you an idea of how this sounds. Clouds bury the vast seascape beyond in a pale silver light. You have a panoramic view of the shoreline of the Gulf. And directly below you, an ancient stone causeway stretches out half a mile beyond the surf and then spirals upward toward the giant statue of a standing man bearing a great crystal globe on his shoulders. This is the Colossus of Yasod. Far out on the dark horizon, to your left, an orange light flashes from the distant sphere of Hod, and far off to the right, a green spark glimmers from the sphere of Netzach. And as you watch these distant beacons focus their rays on the crystal atop the Colossus, and the crystal shimmers with an electric aura, and suddenly a violet ray is projected directly towards you. Yeah. Now, next week, we're going to be one day advanced. We're going to do it on Friday night. We're going to have the show on Friday night. The reason for that is that our producer and our lovely engineer and our champion, national champion Scrabble player is going to go off to the Scrabble Nationals in Dallas, and she's going to really scrabble them up, and so she'll be she'll be doing that, and so she won't be back, of course, until Thursday. We got to give her time to unscrabble herself and so on, get back then. So it's going to be Friday night, 8:00. And that, then we'll go back to schedule after that. But what we're going to do next week, Hermetic Philosophy. We're going to tell you where all this is supposed to go. Like I was saying to one of the people called in tonight, we're going to tell you what you ought to be doing with all of this stuff and where it ought to be headed at this point. So next week, we'll be philosophical. And be sure and tune in on Friday, and keep those calls coming in because they're great. And have a good one, and we'll see you on Friday. And good magic.